New American Streamlined Destinations by Bernard Hartley and Peter Viney. Revised by Irene Frankel and Peter Viney. Published and copyright Oxford University Press, 1996. Unit 23. A funny thing happened to me.
A funny thing happened to me last Friday. I'd gone into New York to do some holiday shopping. I wanted to get some presents, and I wanted to see the city all decorated for the holidays. You know, the store windows and the big tree at Rockefeller Center. I had gotten into the city early, so by early afternoon, I'd bought everything I wanted. Anyway, I was really tired. All that shopping in crowded stores. And I'd made plans for that night. I just wanted to get home so I could relax before I had to go out again. I went to the Long Island Railroad at Penn Station. It was well before rush hour. I had apparently just missed a train, and the next one wouldn't be leaving for 40 minutes. So I decided I had time for a cup of coffee. I bought a Times and went into a small donut shop and sat at the counter. I ordered a cup of coffee and a box of a half dozen assorted mini donuts. I figured I would eat a couple and take the rest home for my family. Anyway, they were having a special on the mini donuts, and I can't resist a bargain. I started the crossword puzzle in the paper. A few minutes later, a woman sat down next to me on the stool to my left. That surprised me because there were several empty stools. There was nothing strange about her except that she was very tall. In fact, she looked like a typical businesswoman. You know, conservative suit, briefcase. I didn't say anything. I just kept doing the crossword. Suddenly, she reached out, opened the box of donuts, took one out, dunked it in her coffee, and began to eat it. I couldn't believe my eyes. Anyway, I didn't want to make a scene, so I decided to ignore it. I always avoid trouble if I can. I just took a donut myself and went back to my crossword. When the woman took a second donut, I didn't say a word. After all, if I hadn't protested when she took the first one, how could I say anything when she took the second one? I pretended to be very interested in the puzzle. A few minutes later, I casually put out my hand, took another donut, and glanced at the woman. She seemed to be glaring at me. She was making me feel so nervous that I decided to have a third donut. That left only one, for only a minute. Sure enough, the woman took the last donut. I nervously continued eating my donut and decided to leave. I was ready to get up and go when the woman suddenly stood up and hurried out of the donut shop. I felt very relieved and decided to wait for 2 or 3 minutes before going myself. I finished my second cup of coffee, folded my newspaper, and stood up. And there, on the counter, underneath where my paper had been, was my unopened box of donuts.
Unit 24, Murder in New Orleans.
Charles Beresford Tifton was found dead on the floor of his study in the Tifton family mansion in New Orleans. He had been shot 5 times. There were 5 people on the estate, and they all heard the shots at about 4 p.m. The police have taken statements and made the following notes about each of the 5 people.
Lydia Tifton's statement.
I was reading in my bedroom on the first floor. I heard the shots. There were 4 or 5. I wheeled myself into the hall. The study door was open. Ruth Ellen was standing in the doorway screaming. Benson was standing at the French windows. The gun was on the floor next to my husband's body.
J.D.'s statement.
I was in the den. I was listening to a new CD. Suddenly there were 5 shots. I thought it was Uncle Ike at target practice. Then I heard a scream. It sounded like Ruth Ellen, so I opened the connecting door to the study and saw Big Daddy lying there, Benson at the French windows, and Mama and Ruth Ellen together in the doorway to the hall. I couldn't believe my eyes.
Ruth Ellen Potts' statement.
I was in the living room, writing my resume. I heard the shots and ran across the hall. The door to the study was open. There was poor dear Charles, Mr. Tifton, lying in a pool of blood. I started screaming. Benson came in through the French windows. They were open. Then Mrs. Tifton arrived. She didn't say a word. She just stared at me.
Benson's statement.
I was about to take my afternoon walk. The doctor told me to walk twice a day for my heart. Anyway, I had just come out of the back door, and I was walking around the corner of the house when I heard shooting. I ran across the lawn to the French windows. I saw Mr. Charles's body and Miss Ruth Ellen in the doorway.
Unit 24. Listening. Listen to Dwight's statement to the police. Where does he say he was? What does he claim he was doing? Dwight Dubois' statement.
I was out by the pond, fishing in my usual spot, when I heard the shots. I hurried through the trees toward the house. I saw Benson running across the lawn toward the study. When I got there, everybody was in the room. Poor old Charlie was dead. I know a dead man when I see one. After all, I was in the army during the war.
Unit 25. Murder in New Orleans.
Chief of Detectives Tony D'Amato is in charge of the case. Detective Sergeant Novak is his assistant. They're in the Tifton study.
Where is everybody?
They're all in the living room. Reyes is with them. What do you think?
It could have been any of them, couldn't it? Nobody seems very sad. Might have even been all of them.
Yeah. Tifton wasn't exactly popular around here. Nobody liked him. But it could have been an outsider.
No way. It must have been one of them. Let's look at the evidence.
It seems to me that everybody has a motive and nobody has an alibi. They all say they were alone when it happened.
Yes, there are no fingerprints on the gun.
Lydia Tifton?
It couldn't have been her.
Why not?
Well, she's in a wheelchair. She can't move very fast. Anyway, they've been married for 35 years. It just couldn't have been her.
Most murders are committed by someone in the family, and that door goes into her room.
Right, but it was locked.
Doors have keys.
But why would she want to kill him?
Ruth Ellen Potts is a very attractive young woman. We don't know what was going on. She might have been jealous.
But he was over 60. He was old enough to be Potts' grandfather.
Yes. But he was a good-looking man and very rich and powerful.
Dwight Dubois?
What about Dubois, Novak? He's a weird guy.
I've been thinking about that. It couldn't have been him.
Why not?
Why would he need to shoot 5 times? He was a champion marksman. He could have killed him with 1 shot.
Maybe he did, Novak. Maybe he did.
I don't follow.
There are a lot of things you don't follow, Novak. Maybe he's smarter than he looks.
But there's no motive.
There might have been. I mean, there was the scandal with that land development company.
But he was down by the pond.
So? He could have shot him from the trees and thrown the gun into the room.
Oh, yeah. Do you really think so?
I don't know. It's just a theory.
Unit 26. Call in. You're on the air.
Good evening. I'm Harry Baxter, and this is Call In on radio station WLFM. We're talking tonight about government services. Do you think you're getting what you've paid for? What's your opinion? Call in. We'd like to hear from you. The number is 555-1785. Call in. You're on the air.
Hi, Harry. My name is Stuart Amos. I'm a salesman, and I have to drive a lot. Why is it that there's always construction going on all the alternate routes at exactly the same time? I mean, I understand that the roads need to be maintained, but there's absolutely no coordination. Like, when they're fixing one bridge into the city, why do they have to fix the other bridge at the same time? It's ridiculous.
Good point, Stuart. Let's hope the Department of Transportation folks are listening. Call in. You're on the air.
Good evening, Harry. I'm Hilda Diaz. Why are they closing the fire station in my neighborhood? We need it to stay open. I heard that the response time is going to be increased by 10 minutes if that fire station closes. 10 minutes. That could mean the difference between life and death, you know. If they're trying to save money, why don't those politicians all take a pay cut? That's where the waste is, if you ask me.
Well, Hilda, you certainly sound passionate. We'll see if the city doesn't change its mind. I hope you've called your city council representative. Call in. You're on the air.
Harry, I'm Milton Kramer. I'm fed up with those sanitation trucks that come in the middle of the night and make all that noise. They must start at around 4 o'clock in the morning, and it's every other night. I'm sound asleep, and I have about 3 more hours before the alarm's going to go off, and the garbage truck comes. I can never get back to sleep, and before I know it, I have to get up for work. It ruins my whole day. There must be a way for them to change the schedule so they don't wake up the neighborhood.
You know, Milton, I've never understood why sanitation trucks have to come in the middle of the night either. I'm sure the sanitation workers wouldn't mind having different hours, say like 7 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And on that note, it's time to say goodnight. Thank you for listening, and remember to tune in again tomorrow.
Unit 27, Making a Complaint.
Good morning. I'd like to speak to the manager.
I am the manager, sir. How can I help you?
Well, it's this radio. It doesn't work.
Did you buy it here?
What? Of course I bought it here. Look, you turn it on and nothing happens.
May I see your receipt?
Receipt? I don't have one.
You must have gotten a receipt when you bought it.
I probably did. I must have thrown it away.
Well, do you have any other proof of purchase? The guarantee, for example?
No. It must have been in the box. I threw that away, too.
That's too bad. You really ought to have kept it. We need to know the exact date of purchase.
What? I only bought it yesterday. That young man over there waited on me. Oh, I paid by credit card. I have my copy here.
Oh, all right then. Did you test the radio before you left the store?
Test it? No, it was in the original box. I expected it to work. It wasn't some cheap radio. It's a good brand.
You should have tested it.
Come on, stop telling me what I should have done and do something. Either give me my money back or give me another radio.
There's no need to get impatient, sir. Let me look at it. You see this little switch in the back?
Yes.
It's on AC, and it should be on DC. You really should have read the instructions.
Oh.
Unit 28, The Mary Celeste.
The Mary Celeste was built in 1861 in Nova Scotia, Canada, as a cargo-carrying sailing ship. When it was launched, it was given the name Amazon. It was not a lucky ship. The first captain died a few days after it was registered, and on its first voyage in 1862, it was badly damaged in a collision. While it was being repaired in port, it caught fire. In 1863, it crossed the Atlantic for the first time, and in the English Channel, it collided with another ship that sank. The Amazon was badly damaged itself. In 1867, it ran aground on Cape Breton Island off the Canadian coast and had to be rebuilt. It was then sold, and the name was changed to the Mary Celeste. Sailors are very superstitious and dislike sailing on ships which have been unlucky or which have changed their names. Many sailors refuse to sail on the Mary Celeste. On November 5th, 1872, the Mary Celeste left New York, carrying a cargo of industrial alcohol to Genoa in Italy. There were 11 people on board. Captain Briggs, an experienced captain, his wife and 2-year-old daughter, and a crew of 8. A month later, the Mary Celeste was seen by another ship, the De Gratia, about halfway between the Azores and the Portuguese coast. Captain Morehouse, the Mary Celeste was completely deserted. The only lifeboat was missing. All the sails were up and in good condition. All the cargo was there. The ship had obviously been through storms. The glass cover on the compass was broken. The windows of the deck cabins had been covered with wooden planks. There was 3 feet of water in the cargo hold, which was not enough to be dangerous. The water pumps were working perfectly. There was enough food for 6 months and plenty of fresh water. All the crew's personal possessions, clothes, boots, pipes and tobacco, etc., were on board. There were toys on the captain's bed. There was food and drink on the cabin table. Only the navigation instruments and ship's papers were missing. The last entry in the ship's logbook had been made 11 days earlier, about 600 miles west, but the ship had continued in a straight line from there. The forehatch was found open. There were 2 deep marks on the bow near the waterline. There was a deep cut on the ship's rail, made by an axe. There were old brown bloodstains on the deck and on the captain's sword, which was in the cabin. Captain Morehouse and his crew were given the salvage money for bringing the ship to port. There was a long official investigation, but the story of what had happened on the ship and what had happened to the crew still remains a mystery.
Unit 29. What do you think happened?
I don't know what happened, but it must have happened suddenly.
Why do you think that?
Think about it. There were toys on the captain's bed, weren't there? The kid must have been playing, and they must have interrupted her suddenly.
Yes, that's true. And food was on the table. They must have been eating or getting ready to eat.
The lifeboat was missing, right? They could have been practicing their emergency drill. They must have gotten into the boat and launched it.
All right. But what happened to the boat?
Well, they may have been rowing the lifeboat around the ship, and there must have been a gust of wind. Then the ship could have moved forward and run down the lifeboat. That explains the marks on the bow.
Come on. They couldn't have all been sitting in the lifeboat. What about the captain? He should have been steering the ship.
Well, he might have been watching the drill and jumped in to save the others.
Unit 31. Apologies.
Hello?
Hi, Raphael. This is Alex.
Oh, hi. Did you get home all right?
Yeah, thanks, but I wanted to apologize for last night.
Don't worry about it.
But your carpet, it must be ruined. It was so dumb of me to put my coffee on the floor.
Come on, Alex, forget it.
But it must have made a really ugly stain.
Look, it's nothing. I was upset at first, but it doesn't look so bad this morning.
Anyway, I want to pay for the cleaning.
Listen, Alex, it's no big deal. Accidents happen, at parties especially.
Well, if you say so, but I really am sorry.
Okay. See you on Monday. Bye now.
Excuse me, would you mind not walking on the grass?
I beg your pardon?
You aren't allowed to walk on the grass.
Really? I didn't see a sign.
There it is, right over there.
Oh, you're right. I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, good morning, Marianne.
Good afternoon, Sharon. Late again, I see.
Yes, I'm sorry. I couldn't find a parking place.
Maybe you should have left home earlier.
Yes, I know. It won't happen again, Marianne.
It had better not, Sharon. This is the third time this week.
Hey, you.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, you. What do you think you're doing?
I'm just waiting for the bus.
Can't you see there's a line?
Oh, there is? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut. I didn't realize there was a line.
Are you all right?
Yes, I'm okay. But what about my car?
There doesn't seem to be too much damage.
Let me see. Look at that. This is a brand new car. You shouldn't have been going so fast.
Well, it wasn't my fault.
It wasn't your fault? What do you mean, it wasn't your fault? I had the right of way.
As a matter of fact, you didn't. You shouldn't have come out like that.
Why not? There's no stop sign.
Then what's that?
Oh, a stop sign. I must have missed it.
Well, you should have been more careful. You could have gotten us all killed.
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. What else can I say?
Just thank goodness nobody's hurt. Here come the police. You'd better explain it to them.
Unit 32. They didn't stop to tell me.
Police Captain Mel Torino is questioning Nicholas Estrella, the driver of the hijacked Ruby Star truck.
Let's start at the beginning again, Mr. Estrella. How did you lose your truck?
I was making deliveries in Bedford. The truck was loaded with TVs, VCRs, radios, you know, electronics.
Uh-huh. So you drove to Bedford from the Ruby Star warehouse.
Right. About 10 o'clock, I made a delivery on Boyle Street. I had finished, and I was driving up Boyle when I saw a coffee shop.
So you decided to stop.
That's right. I stopped to get a sandwich to go.
Go on.
It didn't take me more than 3 minutes. I started walking back to the truck, and...
Did you see anybody near the truck?
No, nobody. So anyway, I decided to make a phone call. I passed a magazine stand, and I stopped to get change.
Okay, then what?
Well, I was talking to my wife when I saw the truck going down the street. I couldn't believe my eyes. I dropped the phone and ran down the street, but they were moving fast. I couldn't catch up.
Did you remember to lock the cab door?
Yes, I always remember to lock it. I'm not stupid.
Okay, take it easy. Can you actually remember locking it this time?
Yes, definitely. I remember putting the key in the lock. The key was all wet and dirty. It was raining, and I dropped it in a puddle.
What about the door on the other side? Did you remember to check it?
I don't actually remember checking it, but it's always locked, and I never use it.
But you don't remember checking it?
No, not really. Maybe I forgot to check it.
So, it could have been open.
Yes, I guess so. But I'd bet anything it wasn't.
So what's your theory?
They must have had keys. They started the engine, didn't they?
How did they get the keys?
Don't ask me. I have no idea. They didn't stop to tell me.
Unit 33. John Lennon, 1940 to 1980.
John Lennon was murdered just before 11 p.m. on December 8, 1980, outside the Dakota, the apartment building where he lived in New York City. He had just gotten out of a car and was walking to the entrance when a voice called, "Mr. Lennon." Lennon turned and was shot 5 times. The killer threw his gun down and stood there smiling.
"Do you know what you just did?" shouted the doorman.
"I just shot John Lennon," the killer replied. Lennon was rushed to the hospital in a police car, but it was too late. The killer was 25-year-old Mark Chapman from Hawaii.
Earlier the same evening, he had asked Lennon for his autograph. In fact, he had been hanging around outside the apartment building for several days. Chapman was a fan of Lennon's and had tried to imitate him in many ways. It is said that he even believed that he was John Lennon.
Unit 34. Beach Watch.
Hey, look at that guy. He's way out there.
You're right. Unless he turns around soon, he'll be in trouble.
I'm going in. That guy needs help. Call emergency services.
Oh, no! Unless the lifeguard gets there soon, that guy will drown!
Unless the lifeguard brings him in fast, the guy will die.
Unless she can get his heart going, he won't make it.
I've got a pulse.
If I were that guy, I'd give those lifeguards a reward.
Unit 35. Have you seen this ad?
Wanda, have you seen this ad?
Yeah, it looks great, doesn't it? I called them an hour ago. They'll call back if they want me.
Oh, they'll want you. You have beautiful hair.
Thanks. You know I'm excited. I mean, if I go, I'll get a new hairstyle for nothing.
Hey, Bill, look at this ad.
It looks like fun. Why don't you call them up?
I'd love to, but it's a waste of time. My hair is just too short.
Well, I like it the way it is. Anyway, you don't know what they might do.
Oh, that wouldn't bother me. If I had longer hair, I'd call them up. Actually, your hair is pretty long now.
Pablo, look at this. It sounds great. And you have a decent car.
But there are some disadvantages.
Every job has disadvantages.
Oh, I don't know. I'm willing to try it, but I won't take it if they don't pay the phone bill.
Pam, did you see this?
Yeah. You aren't interested, are you?
No, there are too many things wrong with it.
Like what?
Are you kidding? You wouldn't have any security. You wouldn't earn anything if you didn't work all day long every day. And I wouldn't take a job in sales if they didn't provide a car.
Look at the address. Some hotel. I'd never work for a company if they didn't even have an office.
Tina, what do you think of this ad?
It was in last Sunday's paper, too. I called. I have an interview tomorrow.
Do you think you'll get it?
They seem very interested on the phone. I think they'll offer me the job.
So you're going to France?
I didn't say that. I won't take the job unless they give me a round-trip ticket. It'll be hard work, and I won't go unless they offer me a good salary.
There's a job in France in the paper.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't dream of taking it.
Why not? You've always wanted to work overseas.
It's hard work, isn't it? One night off a week.
But the money might be good.
Well, I wouldn't take it unless they pay me a really good salary, with a longer vacation and more free time. And I certainly wouldn't go anywhere overseas unless my ticket was round trip.
Unit 36. Glacier Watch.
Carmen Melvin is from Miami, Florida. She's on vacation in Alaska, and she's taken a flight seeing trip to a glacier. The helicopter has landed on the glacier.
This way. Watch where you're going, please. Our insurance company doesn't want you to hurt yourselves.
This is incredible.
Isn't it great? Oh, watch your step and stay close by me. That is, unless you want to fall into a crevice. There are crevices hundreds of feet deep over there. We're going to begin by walking over to look at them.
There's so much ice. And they keep telling us about global warming, you know, that the Earth is getting hotter.
Well, I've been doing this job for 5 years, and the glacier has retreated. It used to be half a mile longer.
Oh, really?
Sure. Unless it begins snowing more during the winters, it'll be gone in 50 years.
What's the reason for that?
We can't say. Farther north, some glaciers are still advancing. Maybe it's the local weather here in southeast Alaska, not the world climate. Unless we do more research, we won't know.
People say it's the greenhouse gases. You know, if every car carried one more passenger, the United States would use less gasoline.
Well, maybe. If everyone planted one tree a year, things would improve. And if we all walked instead of driving, the air would be cleaner. And I guess we'd all be healthier. But you can't measure it, really.
So in 50 years' time, this will all be gone?
Right. Unless the winters start getting colder.
Colder winters? How do you feel about that here in Alaska? Aren't they cold enough for you?
Sure. But I wouldn't live here unless I liked snow and ice. And tourists wouldn't come here unless there were glaciers. And believe me, we need the tourist business.
Unit 37. What would you have done?
The Reader's Page. What would you have done? Last week, we invited you, the readers, to write and tell us about things that had happened to you or things that you had heard about. We wanted stories where people just didn't know what to do next. Here are the stories that interested us the most. That's my coffee. Or was.
I was at a counter in a restaurant in a small western town. I had just been served a cup of coffee. Suddenly, this huge man, he looked like a boxer, came over, picked up my coffee, drank it, banged the cup down on the table, stared at me, and then walked away without saying anything. I suppose I should have said something, but I was scared stiff. I didn't know what to do. What would you have done? Stanley Wimpy, Carbondale, Illinois.
In deep water.
I was driving through Oregon on my vacation. It was a very hot day, and I stopped at a small, deserted beach. I didn't have my bathing suit with me, but it was early in the morning, and there were no people or houses in sight. So I took off my clothes and swam out in the ocean in my underwear. I'm a very strong swimmer. I floated on my back, closed my eyes, and relaxed in the water. When I looked back at the beach, several cars had arrived, and there were 20 or 30 people sitting on the sand having a picnic. What would you have done? Jane Dare, Spokane, Washington.
That's a no-no.
I heard a great story about the Reverend Billy Cracker. He'd gone to London to speak at a large meeting. Anyway, when he stepped off the plane, there were a lot of reporters and TV cameras. The first question one of the reporters asked was, "Do you intend to visit any nightclubs in London?" Reverend Cracker smiled at the reporter. "Are there any nightclubs in London?" he answered innocently. The next morning, the headline in one of the London papers was, "Cracker's first question on arrival in London, are there any nightclubs?" How would you have felt? Reverend Oral Richards, Columbia, South Carolina.
Strangers in the Night.
My story isn't funny at all. It was a very frightening experience. You see, one night I woke up suddenly. I heard the tinkle of broken glass from downstairs, and I heard the window opening. Then I heard two voices. My wife woke up, too. She told me to do something. A couple of days before, there had been a report about a burglary in the local paper. The burglars had been interrupted, and they had beaten up the homeowner. They'd nearly killed him. I was trembling with fear. I just didn't know what to do. In the end, I didn't go down, and they stole the sterling silverware we had inherited from my mother. Was I right? What would you have done? Lorenzo Machado, Abilene, Texas.
Deep fried.
I had parked my car at a local shopping mall. and I was taking a shortcut through the side door of a restaurant. Halfway across the restaurant, I spotted my father eating a hamburger and French fries. He often eats there. I sneaked up behind him, put my hand over his shoulder, took a French fry off the plate, dipped it in the ketchup, and ate it. Then I realized that the man was not my father. I was so embarrassed. I couldn't say a word. What would you have done? Cheryl Redburn, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Unit 38. A bad day at the office.
What was wrong this morning?
Wrong? What do you mean?
You walked straight past me.
Really? Where?
By that newsstand on First Street.
I'm really sorry, Amy. I just didn't see you.
Come on, Tim. You must have. I was waving.
No, honestly, I didn't see you. If I had seen you, I would have said hello.
Tim, have you sent that fax to Japan?
No, I haven't.
Why haven't you done it yet? It's urgent.
Because you didn't ask me to do it.
I didn't?
No, you didn't. If you had asked me, I'd have sent it.
Achoo!
What's the matter, Debbie? You don't look well.
No, I've had a terrible cold. It's better today, though.
I had a bad cold last week.
I know, and you gave it to everyone in the office. I wouldn't have come to work if I'd had a cold like that.
Tim, did you type this letter or did Akiko?
I did. Is there something wrong?
Take a look. This should be $400,000. You typed $40,000.
Oops. I'm really sorry.
And the customer's name should be Snelling, not Smelling.
Oh, no. Did I put that?
If I hadn't noticed it, we could have lost the order.
Hi, Tim. Did you have a good day today?
No, not really. I'm glad it's over. Everything went wrong.
Really?
Yeah. I made a lot of mistakes in typing, then I forgot to send a fax, and Amy got upset because I ignored her on the street.
Why was that?
If I hadn't gone to bed late, it wouldn't have been such an awful day.
Unit 39. A Saturday afternoon.
Laura felt slightly uneasy as the guard unlocked the gates and waved her through. The Blitzkopf Clinic was, after all, the most exclusive institution of its type in the country. She parked her car outside the main entrance of the sterile white main building. She paused on the steps to look at the beautiful flower gardens. An old man was watering the flower bed beside the steps. He smiled at her.
Good afternoon. Are you a new patient?
Oh, I'm not a patient. I'm just here to do some research. I wonder if you could tell me the way to Dr. Blitzkopf's office?
Certainly. Just go through the main door, turn left, walk down to the end of the hall, and it's the last door on the right.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Blitzkopf was expecting her. He had been looking forward to meeting his new research assistant. Dr. Blitzkopf showed her around. He was obviously very proud of his clinic, and Laura was impressed by the relaxed and informal atmosphere. For the next few weeks, Laura spent the mornings interviewing patients and the afternoons in the flower gardens, writing up the results of her research. Some of the patients were withdrawn and depressed. Some seemed almost normal. She found it hard to believe that all of them had been considered too dangerous to live in normal society. Laura often saw the old man in the straw hat. He spent most of his time working in the flower gardens, but he always stopped to speak to her. She found out that his name was Edward Beale. He was a gentle and mild-mannered man with clear, blue, honest eyes, white hair, and a pinkish complexion. He always looked pleased with life. She became particularly curious about him. One night, at dinner, she asked about Mr. Beale.
Ah, yes, Edward. Nice old guy. He's been here longer than anybody.
What's wrong with him?
Nothing. His family put him here 40 years ago. They never come to visit him, but the bills are always paid on time.
But what had he done?
He burned down his school when he was 17. Over the next few years, there were a number of mysterious fires in his neighborhood. But the family did nothing until he tried to set fire to the family mansion. He was in here the next day. Edward never protested.
And that was 40 years ago?
I'm afraid so.
But he couldn't still be dangerous.
No. If he wanted to start a fire, he could have done it at any time.
Laura was shocked by the story. She wrote letters to Edward's family, but never received a reply. He had never been officially certified as insane, so he could leave at any time. Dr. Blitzkopf let her talk to Edward.
Edward, have you ever thought about leaving this place?
No, this is my home. And anyway, I have nowhere else to go.
But wouldn't you like to go into town sometimes?
I suppose it would be nice, but I wouldn't want to stay away for long. I've spent 40 years working on this garden. What would happen to it if I weren't here?
Laura realized that it would be unkind to make him leave. But when she found out that the next Saturday was his birthday, she arranged with the staff to give him a party. They wanted it to be a surprise, and Dr. Blitzkopf agreed to let him go out for the afternoon. Edward left at 2 o'clock. He seemed quite excited. They expected him to return about 4 o'clock. The cook had made a birthday cake. Laura was standing in the window when she saw him. He was walking up the drive toward the house, whistling cheerfully. Behind him, above the trees, thick, black columns of smoke were beginning to rise slowly into the clear blue sky.
Unit 40, Vacation, USA.
Marisol is Colombian and married to George Merrick, an American teaching in Colombia. They've just returned to Colombia, and George is telling his friends at work about their trip.
We had a great time, but it was pretty tiring. We went on most of the tours because Marisol didn't want to miss anything. I really felt we needed more time. If we went again, we'd stay longer. We would have spent more time in San Francisco and less time in Los Angeles if we'd had a choice. Los Angeles was a little disappointing. We went on a tour of Beverly Hills to see the houses of the stars, but unless you had studied film history, you would never have heard of most of them. Generally speaking, the hotels, food, and service were excellent. Marisol found Americans to be very friendly. We probably took too much luggage. Clothes in California were so cheap. It would have been a good idea to take along an empty suitcase. If I'd done that, the savings on clothes would almost have paid for half of the airfare. Well, not really.
The Rizzos, a retired couple from Bangor, Maine, were on the tour with the Merricks. Florence Rizzo was asked about the trip.
We'd been looking forward to this trip for years, and it was the vacation of a lifetime. I think we enjoyed Las Vegas the most, but 2 nights were probably enough. If we'd stayed there much longer, we'd have lost all our money. Disneyland is a must for anyone with children. If only we'd had our grandchildren with us, they would have loved it. We went on some of the tours, and we could have gone on more. But you can't see everything, can you? I love the food in California. You know, all those salads and fresh vegetables. We wouldn't have gone on this trip unless it had been an escorted tour group. We're not as young as we used to be, and we couldn't have done it on our own. Everyone, however, was so helpful to us.
Unit 40. Listening. Listen to the ad for Dr. Bronner's Hot Spring Spa and answer these questions.
When you're visiting Northern California, be sure to come to Dr. Bronner's Hot Spring Spa in beautiful, relaxing Calistoga for a fabulous health break. For just $69, you'll get a complete health treatment. Mud bath, mineral bath, sauna, steam wrap, and massage. We guarantee that you'll come out feeling refreshed, rejuvenated, and just plain terrific, all for only $69. You can stay at Dr. Bronner's overnight for just $94. All the rooms are spacious and quiet, with large private baths. They all have color TVs, mini refrigerators, and microwaves. Your comfort is our business. We're conveniently located on Lincoln Avenue, just one block from the Calistoga Bookstore. For reservations, call 1-707-555-2478.
Unit 42. I wish.
Yes?
Your call from New York's on line one. Paris has just come through on line two. And there's a call from Tokyo on line four.
Ask them to call back tomorrow, Judy. Tell them I'm not here. It's too late. I wish I wasn't here. I've had enough today.
But they're urgent. All of them.
Do you know something, Judy? I wish I was at home now, in front of the television with a cup of hot chocolate.
Look at that. It's pouring again. And I have to walk to the bus stop.
Well, at least it's not snow.
It's all right for Waspson. His limousine is downstairs waiting to take him home.
Yeah, I wish I had a chauffeur-driven limousine.
I wish I had a car. Any car. I'm going to get soaked tonight.
Hi, Jane. Still here?
Yes, I'm waiting to see Waspson.
You don't usually work late.
I wish I wasn't working this evening. There's a good game on TV.
Oh, well, maybe he'll call you in soon.
I hope he does.
Haven't you left yet?
No, I wish I had. I can't go until I've finished this report.
Can't you do it tomorrow?
I wish I could, but Waspson wants it tonight.
How are you doing, Joe?
Oh, hi, Shirley. I don't feel like working tonight.
Neither do I. I hate this kind of work.
Why do you do it, then?
I wish I didn't have to, but we need the money. My husband's out of work again.
I know what you mean. I wish I'd learned how to type or something like that.
We can all wish. I dropped out of school at 16. I wish I hadn't. But I never got good grades, and I hated it. Kids have it really easy in school nowadays. I wish we'd had more of a chance. I'd never have ended up cleaning offices.
Come on, Shirley. Let's try to finish early and get out of here.
Look at that, Sergeant. There are still lights on in the insurance company again.
Yes, it looks nice and warm, doesn't it? I sometimes wish I worked there.
You do? Really?
Uh-huh. Sometimes. A nice office, a desk, lots of people around. It can't be bad.
And the boss's limo outside.
Still, you know what they say. The grass is always greener on the other side.
I suppose you're right, Sarge. Hey, that limousine is in front of a fire hydrant.
Oh, yeah. Give him a parking ticket, Lucy. He can afford it.
Unit 43. The happiest days of your life?
Some people say that your days in school are the happiest days of your life. Here are five people talking about their experiences.
Wade Hamlin is a successful self-employed builder.
School, it's a waste of time mostly. At least it was for me. I quit after my sophomore year in college because I stopped hoping that I would ever learn anything. I wanted to start earning a living in the real world. The biggest problem with school is the teachers. If I'd listened to my teachers, I would know all about Shakespeare and what day the Civil War started and how to conjugate Spanish verbs and how to prove the Pythagorean theorem and all that junk. But I wouldn't know anything about how to make a business deal or raise my kids or anything that's really important. I'm sorry I went to school at all.
Anne Marie Johnson is the personnel manager of a department store.
I loved school. I was a straight-A student almost every year, but I didn't spend all my time studying. I participated in a lot of extracurricular activities and sports, too. I was in student government both in high school and in college. I was always sorry when summer vacation started. 3 months with no school. Most kids like vacations more than school, but not me. Some of my friends in high school didn't go to college, but they regret it now. Some of them would have done well if they had been encouraged to go. I only regret not going to graduate school after I got my bachelor's degree. I've started an MBA at night, but it's not the same. Work is all right, but I miss the friends and the fun that went along with the studying.
Craig Phillips is a Wall Street stockbroker.
I went to prep school, and then I went to Harvard. I guess you could say I had the best education money could buy, but it wasn't easy. We had to study very hard, and a lot was expected of us. The thing I remember most is the friendship. The friends I made then are still my friends today. Most of us were together in prep school, and then at Harvard, too. Sports were very important for me. I believe that team sports teach people to work together, and competition with another team brings out the best in people. Anyway, discipline was stricter then. It's too bad that it's changed. Maybe young people would be better behaved nowadays if there was more discipline in the schools. My biggest regret is that I didn't have the family life other boys had. After age 12, I only saw my family at Christmas and in the summer.
Colleen McGrath is a factory worker.
School was just another part of neighborhood life. My brothers and sisters and I went to a parochial elementary school 3 blocks from home. Later, we had to take a bus to the public high school, but it was only a 10-minute ride. And then we all went to the local community college. I wish my kids could do that. I have to take the youngest in the car to the big elementary school across the river. A school bus picks up the other two who are in junior high school, and it takes them almost an hour each way. I wish things hadn't changed so much.
Unit 43. Listening. Listen to Kay Wilson talk about her school days and answer these questions.
I went to a big high school in the Midwest. We lived in a well-to-do suburb, so the school was pretty good academically. I wish my parents had let me take more science and math courses. No, I wish I had insisted on taking what I wanted to. For college, they sent me east to a fancy girls' school. For them, girls went to college only to meet the right boy. And, as a second thought, to have something to fall back on, in case your husband died and you had to go to work. I thought they were right, and I was wrong. So I majored in literature. I never met the right boy. Instead of falling back on teaching literature, I'm in advertising. In fact, I'm the vice president of my agency. It's okay. But if I had taken the subjects I wanted, I would be an engineer or an astronaut. I wish my teachers had given me better advice. I'm really sorry my parents didn't let me do what I wanted.
Unit 44, New Year's Eve.
It's 10 minutes before midnight, and we're going over live to Times Square in New York City. There are 250,000 people out there, and they're all waiting to celebrate the new year. Adam Vasquez is going to talk to just a few of them. How are you doing, Adam?
great, Naomi, just great. As you can see, there's a real party atmosphere down here. I'm going to move through the crowd and talk to some of the people who have come here. Excuse me, can I speak to you for a moment, please?
Sure.
What are your names and where are you from?
I'm Robin, and this is my boyfriend, Phil. We're from New Jersey.
New Jersey, just across the river. Are you having a good time?
Great time. No problems. We watched the ball drop on TV ever since we were kids. This is the first time we've actually come in person. It's great, really great.
Do you work in New Jersey?
Yeah, I'm a nurse.
Okay, Robin, I want to ask you one question, just one. If you could have one wish for next year, what would you wish for?
A serious wish or just kidding around?
You choose.
Okay. If I could have one wish, I'd wish for three more wishes.
That's against the rules, Robin.
Well, seriously, I'd wish for an end to famine and starvation everywhere.
Great. Thanks, and a happy new year to both of you.
Unit 44. Listening. Adam interviewed four more people. Listen and complete the chart. 1.
Hi there.
Hi. Aren't you that guy from TV?
That's right.
Yeah. You're Alan Vasquez.
That's Adam Vasquez. Are you having a good time tonight?
Yeah.
What's your name?
This is Tony King talking to you from Times Square. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
Where are you from, Tony?
Boston. I'm a student here in New York.
A student, huh? Well, you have one wish, Tony. What are you going to wish for?
Good grades. That's my wish for next year. Good grades.
Thanks, Tony.
2.
Pardon me, ma'am. Can I ask you a few questions?
Sure. Go right ahead.
You're on network TV. Tell me about yourself.
Well, my name's Susan Lee. And I live here in New York. I'm a teacher. I teach second grade.
Great. If you had one wish for next year, what would it be?
Wow. Let me think. Something for the children. I just wish that all people could live together in peace and harmony. You know, no more racial prejudice and wars.
That's great. Really great, Susan.
3.
Excuse me.
Me?
Yes, you, sir. Can I ask you some questions?
Okay.
What's your name?
My name is Peter. Peter Kowalski.
Do you live here in New York?
Yes, I do. I've been here for 3 years. I like it very much.
Where do you come from?
I am from Poland. I am working here as a cab driver.
Are you enjoying New Year's Eve?
Yes, it is very good.
If you could make one wish, just one wish, what would you wish for?
So many things. I wish I could travel back home this year and see my grandparents.
I hope your wish comes true, Peter.
Thank you. But first, I have to save my money.
4.
Hi. Am I on TV?
Hi. Yes, you are.
What show is it?
It's the Adam Vasquez show. Do you watch it?
Nah. I always watch David Letterman.
I see. Do you want to give anyone a message?
Wow. I just want to say hi to everyone at Bernard's Burger Bar in Washington, D.C., and a Happy New Year.
Okay. While you're here, can I ask you some questions?
Sure.
So you're from Washington?
That's right. I'm a waitress at Bernard's Burger Bar. And my name's Diane. Diane Kelly.
Okay, Diane. We're going to let you make one wish. What would you wish for?
This is really wild. I'd wish for an end to all the street crime. You know, the streets aren't safe anymore.
Thank you. Okay, it's nearly 10 seconds to midnight, and we're counting down. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2,
Happy New Year!
Unit 45, Operation Impossible.
Now, 006, I want you to look at these pictures carefully. At last, we have the chance to break the biggest crime syndicate in the world. Smash! Look at the man on the right. He's the one we've been after for years.
Who is he?
We think he's the one that controls Smash. He's certainly the one that ordered the murder of 003, the one that planned the hijacking of the airplane full of world leaders, and the one that organized the biggest drug smuggling operation in the world.
Do we know his name?
Otto Krugerrand.
Otto Krugerrand? And who's that standing behind him?
Slowjob. He's the bodyguard who travels everywhere with Krugerrand, and the only person he trusts. He's an expert assassin. He's the one who fed 004 to the alligators.
How charming. What about the woman?
Don't you recognize her?
Marla Powers. She's the one who arranged the pipeline explosion and then vanished into thin air.
She's also Krugerrand's wife and the only pilot he allows to fly his private plane.
Who's the little guy wearing thick glasses?
That's Professor Peratov, the mad scientist who defected from Moldania. He's an expert on laser technology and the first man who's been able to perfect a space laser weapon. Krugerrand is planning to build a private space rocket, which could put a satellite into orbit. Do you understand the importance of this, 006? If they got a laser weapon into space, they could blackmail the world. Take a look at this picture, 006.
It's an oil rig.
It looks like it, doesn't it? It belongs to Krugerrand's oil company. It's supposed to be drilling for oil in the Indian Ocean. Below it, there's a vast underwater complex.
The superstructure looks odd.
In fact, it conceals the launching pad they're going to use for the rocket.
That must be a radar scanner there.
Yes, it's the scanner they'll use to track the rocket. But they can also see anything that tries to get near the rig. It's going to be very difficult to get you in, 006.
What's the plan, then?
We're flying you to California tonight for 2 weeks of intensive mini-submarine training.
That sounds like fun.
Unit 46. Operation accomplished.
When 006 reached the rig, he climbed up one of the towers. He needed to change out of his wetsuit. He went into an empty cabin, found some clothes just his size, and put them on. Suddenly, the guard whose cabin he was searching came in. Everything went dark. 006 woke up with his hands tied behind his back. His head was throbbing. He was apparently in some kind of control room. In the room were Otto Krugerrand, Slowjob, Mala, and the guard whose clothes he was wearing. A beautiful woman whose hands were also tied was lying beside him. She was Pick Wells, an American agent 006 had met in Washington. 006 glanced at his watch. The explosive device he'd put on the rig was timed to explode in 40 minutes.
"Welcome, Commander Fleming. We've been expecting you," Otto said, smiling. "Unfortunately, we won't have time to show you around. Slowjob will take you to feed the sharks. They must be very hungry by now."
Slowjob escorted them to Krugerrand's private apartment. One wall was made of thick glass. Behind it, 006 could see the dark shapes of the sharks swimming around. Slowjob pushed the two agents up a spiral staircase to a platform above the shark tank. He was careful to keep his gun trained on them all the time.
"You wouldn't refuse us a last cigarette, would you, Slowjob?"
006 asked.
"I don't smoke," Slowjob grinned. "And you shouldn't either. It's bad for your health. Now, come on, Slow Job. There are some cigarettes and a lighter in my jacket pocket.
Okay, but don't try anything.
Slow Job reached into 006's pocket and took out the cigarettes and lighter. He took one cigarette out of the pack, pushed it into 006's mouth, and put the pack back into 006's pocket. Slow Job pressed the lighter with his thumb. The sudden force of the flame took him by surprise. At that moment, 006 kicked him, and his gun fell to the floor. Slow Job tumbled backward and disappeared forever into the tank of sharks. The lighter had dropped to the floor and was still burning. 006 was able to burn through the ropes that held his hands. He quickly untied Pick, who picked up Slow Job's gun.
We don't have much time, he said. Can you fly a helicopter?
With my eyes closed, she replied.
Good. Let's go.
006 and Pick tiptoed into the control room where Otto and Mala still were. Peratov had joined them. 006 fired the lighter at the control panel, which exploded and burst into flames. Otto tackled 006, and the lighter flew out of his hand. Mala and Peratov desperately tried to put out the flames. Pick pointed the gun at Mala, Otto, and Peratov, and ordered them to lie on the floor. Then she and 006 ran out of the room, locking it behind them. They ran up to the helicopter pad and quickly climbed into the helicopter. The helicopter soared into the sky. A few seconds later, there was a massive explosion as the rig blew up.
Unit 47, Student Mastermind.
Our next contestant is Vicky McLean, who is a student at Portstown High School. Okay, Vicky, you have 2 minutes in which to answer as many questions as possible. If you do not know the answer, say pass. I will then go on to the next question. If you answer incorrectly, I will then give the correct answer. You will get 1 point for each correct answer. Are you ready?
Yes.
Can you name the President of the United States whose early career began as a radio sports announcer?
Reagan. Ronald Reagan.
Correct. What is an instrument that shows the direction of north?
A compass?
Exactly. What is the date when France celebrates their revolution of 1789?
The 14th of July.
Correct. What do we call a person who always expects the best to happen?
An optimist.
Correct. Can you tell me the language that was spoken in the Roman Empire?
Italian?
No, wrong. The correct answer is Latin. What kind of person do people visit when they want advice about their marriage?
Pass.
Who was the Egyptian queen whose beauty was famous throughout the world?
Cleopatra.
That's correct. What's the kind of school where very rich people send their children before college?
Private school?
Can you be more exact?
No, I can't think of it.
I'm afraid I can't give you that. We were looking for prep school or preparatory school. Now can you tell me? I've started, so I'll finish. Can you tell me the name of the French emperor whose final battle was at Waterloo?
Napoleon Bonaparte.
Correct. And at the end of that round, Vicky McLean has scored 6 points. You passed on one. The kind of person people visit when they want advice about their marriage is a marriage counselor. Thank you. Can we have our next contestant, please?
Unit 48. The Middleburg Herald. Listening 1. Listen to the news item and answer these questions.
Caroline Newton, who was kidnapped last Monday, has been found safe and sound. The 14-year-old, whose parents are well-known and wealthy doctors, was found by police in a house in Bayside, only 20 miles from her home. the alleged kidnappers, who were arrested and charged by police last night, rented the house under the name Mr. and Mrs. Harry Gilmore. Neighbors, who were suspicious of the new renters, called police. The suspects, whose real names are Jill and Andrew Rowland, confessed to the crime. They had sent a note to the girls' parents demanding $1 million.
Unit 48. Listening 2. Listen to the news item and answer these questions.
The so-called wonder drug Curol, which some doctors have been recommending as a painkiller, has been banned by the Federal Food and Drug Administration. After extensive clinical tests, which were first demanded by Ralph Rader, the drug has been found to produce alarming side effects in laboratory mice. The ban stated that while Curol is certainly an effective painkiller, the drug speeds up the aging process, which leads to premature hair loss, stiffening of the joints, and loss of memory.
Unit 50. Relatives.
Marjorie and Felix Hernandez have just come back from a vacation in San Francisco. They are showing photographs of their trip to their friends and neighbors, the Winters.
These are our friends. They picked us up at the airport.
And that's the cable car. It runs on California Street.
This is Marjorie's friend. We visited her.
This is the car. We rented it for 2 weeks.
The tour guide was very knowledgeable. She spoke 5 languages.
And this is Bart. Bart connects San Francisco to Oakland. It's Oakland Subway.
You remember my Aunt Molly, don't you, Joe? You haven't seen her since you were about 10. Well, she's 86 this year. We visited her at her apartment in San Francisco. And this is our tour group. The tour was fun. The hotel booked it for us.
We bought a beautiful bowl from a potter. His store was in the Japan Center, and we met a lot of nice people. We met 2 sisters from Detroit. Their parents live in San Francisco.
And this was taken at the restaurant in the hotel. Kevin Costley was sitting at a table next to ours. We saw his movie last week.